and calling us back to order. So I guess, Wendy, we're going to try and have as full a house for you as possible. Hopefully people will be coming back. You know, I think you go anywhere you go these days, Macs are in vogue. So I'll assume you don't have a deck or anything like that. This will be more freeform, or do you want to share a deck with us? Or okay, no slides. I think probably the best thing to do is, so we have a half an hour here, and if you want to take the microphone, there are certainly registrars in the audience. But if you want to kind of take the mic and I guess we could restart the Adobe Connect room. I don't know. I'm not sure how to do that. Michaela, have you... Technical staff, do you guys restart the Adobe Connect room? Or okay, working on it. Well, Wendy, we'll wait until that's ready before we get into it. Very intimidating. Not quite yet for the launching now. Here we go. We have some video on. We have Michaela has noted that there's a ham wrap that was delicious. Yummy cookies. This is the Connect, Adobe Connect.
Great. As a matter of, you know, order of business, we should have a vote of confidence in the chair for feeding the stakeholder group members.
I we'll second my acclamation. Thanks, guys. We'll thank our customers for making the registrants for making it possible for all of us to eat today. And with that. I think the Adobe Connect is up, Wendy, and you are on stage. Well, maybe not on stage. You're in front of the stage at the mic.
Okay.
Just a question before we start. Is the line open again?
Adobe Connect is open. I know that.
Yes.
So.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you. Wendy Seltzer here from the non-commercial stakeholder group. And I'm one of the GNSO counselors there. I didn't come with a specific presentation for you, so really wanted to engage in some dialogue. I can tell you some of the things that are on the NCSG plate. We just came from the constituency part of the meeting. So NCSG is the non-commercial stakeholders group with the non-commercial and non-profit constituencies under that. We represent users and registrants of domain names who are in the non-commercial space, which includes individual registrants, it includes academics, it includes nonprofit organizations, it includes associations, people interested in development, people interested in consumer protection issues. And we are, as you all know, one of the two stakeholder groups in the non-contracted house of the GNSO Council on the Byzantine structure that is ICANN. So we see our role as looking out for the rights and interests of individual and non-commercial users and registrants. One of the items of discussion for us has been freedom of expression and human rights impact. We're looking to formalize that as a framework that we can apply to issues that come before ICANN for discussion. What would be their impact on human rights and freedom of expression? And if we can put a few items into a template that we can then use, apply against various items under consideration, would this adversely affect human rights? Would it help human rights? Would it have no impact at all? We've saw that, for example, in consideration of some of the law enforcement requests to registrars, we've expressed concern that that publication of all registrants' data can be a challenge for registrants who are expressing sensitive positions, minority positions, who might fear for their safety if information were exposed, or if registrars were pressured to be less hospitable to registrants expressing minority viewpoints. So we're looking to describe that more in more detail, and then offer up ways that we could use that kind of analysis in future issues before the council. That's also a place where we'd like to work with the registrars. I don't think any of you has an interest in knocking people offline who are engaged in legitimate speech. I think all of you are interested in serving customers from the nonprofit and individual as well as the commercial side. We want to offer support to you in the negotiations and in the process when it comes back down to council afterwards of standing up for the pieces of current registration that allow for privacy and proxy services, that allow for individuals to mask some of the information from publication, shielding from onerous verification requirements, individuals and organizations for whom that just won't work, making sure that individuals from and organizations from around the world are able to register and participate effectively through domain name registration.
And I think you commented yesterday at the verification panel, you had a few questions or that kind of solicited some responses from you that I think, you know, that might be relevant for the folks here that weren't able to make it. And, you know, I think you could also comment to that. I think that would be helpful.
Sure. I know that that's been a big topic of discussion, and I think I started by asking what's the problem that verification is designed to solve, and what's the problem that Accurate Who Is designed to solve. And too often we see, oh, there's a database, and therefore that database should be accurate, rather than looking at it as what information we need, how can we assure that the people who legitimately need that information have it, without exposing the personal contact details of anyone who wants to communicate on the internet to anyone who wants to gain access to them. I think it's critical in looking at verification that we watch for the false positives and false negatives, the places where people will be denied registrations because they don't match what's normal, even though they are legitimate registrants and real people or real organizations. How does this scale around the world? How does this scale to different payment mechanisms? How does it scale to organizations that are legitimately concerned about making their contact details available? We can't simply import standards from credit card verification or purchase verification or the standards that the Chinese registration authority put into place, which have been criticized elsewhere in the world for their impact on free expression. Sure, you can get accurate data at the cost of having most of the people knocked offline because they're afraid to provide accurate data and they're afraid of what might happen to them if they're traced through that accurate data. I think we're not aiming for the standards of an authoritarian government in our data practices. Is that a question?
I'll take a cue for folks. Who's that? James, you had a question?
Yeah, thanks. James speaking. Thanks, Wendy. Appreciate the update. And I think that you raised some excellent points, both in the discussion, the Who is Validation workshop that was here yesterday, and also in the in some of the earlier sessions of the Who is Review team. So appreciate that. I think that just as a group, folks who are discussing this issue probably should separate the concepts of privacy versus accuracy. I don't think that I think that that's too easily rhetorically turned around into, you know, inaccurate data is not a protection of privacy, and no one should hide behind inaccurate or incomplete data. And I think that we can say that there are enough privacy and proxy services available that can contain accurate data and be private and protected. And I think you're absolutely spot on. As soon as I saw that we were seeing some presentations from CNNIC yesterday, I just kind of shook my head because not only did they lose millions and millions of registrants, but you know, one registrar in particular no longer offers that product because of the onerous nature of the data checking and what that means for you know, for folks who want to become a registrant in China. So, so thanks again for your comments, and just wanted to caution against casually blending accuracy and privacy. I think that those are two separate issues. Thanks.
Thanks, James. And I think one of the comments that we will be making to the Who is Review team and elsewhere is emphasize that there is a legitimate right to privacy, which then makes it easier for people to talk about the real interests in accuracy as well. And I think if we can separate the collection from the display of information, we also give people more opportunities to be accurate and private at the same time. Thanks.
Elliot?
Yeah, Wendy, is there any time frame? There's two small things. One is there any time frame for that framework you talked about at the beginning?
Let's see. If we could get it into draft form by the Prague meeting, I think we'd that would be a time frame.
Great. And one of the things that I think, you know, down the road we could probably also use a lot of help with is a view on, I guess, you know, when disclosure is appropriate. And so, you know, I think that the world a year from now is going to be one. You know, right now we have a very simple test around, you know, sort of national laws. But I think that the borders are going to blur. We've already seen some transnational actions. I imagine that's only going to get more so. You know, we've also seen even inside of countries, you know, the extension of private rights into criminal law. And, you know, I think it would be, if there was some sort of a general framework around what's appropriate for disclosure and what's not, that was a little more nuanced than just it's the law, that would probably be, you know, very helpful for us and appropriately come from you guys.
Thanks, Elliot. That's another great place where this framework could help, and I think you're right to be able to say more than due process and national law, but to start delving into the details of what that looks like and how we can help those who are facing disclosure obligations to get to best practices that are good for the legitimate registrant and good for the community.
One more to that list, by the way, is test for disclosure amongst law enforcement. You know, we know of situations, for instance, where law enforcement agencies in, let's say, good countries will sometimes use bad countries to achieve means. And I could see here the reverse being true. You know, bad country using law enforcement in good country to get disclosure of information that they might not otherwise be able to get themselves.
Yeah, thank you. And maybe this would be a place where we could start trying to work in partnership. Maybe there's a way to form a working group among a few people from non-commercial and a few people from registrars, because I think the kinds of examples that you might be able to give to help us flesh out what are the real concerns of a disclosure regime would be very helpful. And I have some experience coming from places like Chilling Effects, but you see a lot more. Frankly, we need to be able to speak to the legitimate disclosure as well as the illegitimate demands for disclosure. And I think getting that balance right will be really important.
Volker, I have you next.
Hi, Wendy. As a member of the RAA negotiation team, a lot of these points that you have raised have been raised by us as well. The problem with us raising these points has always been that we have been seen as having ulterior motives or just not wanting to adapt to necessary changes. We have been so far successful in steering the problem of who is verification into the direction of a PDP or a public process. And I think that's where your stakeholder group comes in and can contribute to the problem a lot. Because I think our interests align. We have the same issues with these problems, but the more groups voice these issues, the more voices are heard, the better the result will be in the end for everyone.
Thank you. I think we are eager to be able to be helpful to make those comments in the JNSO, in public comment periods. And so heads up informally or to places and times when comments can be helpful on areas of shared interest, I think would be good. I think putting this into PDP where we can get all of the affected parties talking about it rather than just having an individual negotiation can be helpful to air out those issues.
Thank you.
Just one suggestion. I think for the registrars in the room, I've been trying to have at least a monthly call with leadership on the NCSG, and that's been, I think, helpful in making sure that when there is an opportunity to collaborate, that we seize on it and don't just let it pass by because we haven't touched base. So I think that's going to be one part, and that constant communication will, I'm sure, lead to other ways. Michele? And also a note for the folks on stage, it's difficult. If you're not within a few inches of the microphone, it's difficult for people to hear you online. So,
Thanks, Wendy, for the update. I mean, I think, you know, your views on the who is on the entire who is side of things and privacy, we all know what they are. So, you know, adding your voice, which is, as Volker said, coming from somebody who wouldn't be seen as being possibly biased. I mean, the other thing as well, which is very important, is that if we as registrars are obliged to implement some form of extended validation and verification, that's ultimately going to mean that the price of a domain name or the cost for a small business or a private individual to get online, if they're legitimate, you know, they're going to end up paying the same price as somebody who's not so legitimate, and that is going to increase the digital divide. I think yesterday we heard from Stuart Lawley from ICM going on about the costs that they incurred, and that would actually effectively double or triple the price of a .com if you're looking at the lower end of the market. Sure, if you're a big corporate who doesn't mind spending hundreds of dollars per year per domain, it won't impact them, but I suspect that most most of us are dealing with people with less money, let's just say. Thanks.
Thanks. That's right. That was another of the points that I made as well, that this is potentially setting up barriers to entry on many places, barriers to entry for would-be participants in the registry and registrar business, as well as barriers to registrants who are disproportionately the ones in developing world are going to be the more likely, more expensive to verify, and so that sets up the wrong incentives toward serving people in those regions as well.
Yeah, just one other comment on that. In the course of preparing for that the workshop that we had, I spoke with someone who was on the WHOIS review team, and they represented to me that no one on that, and maybe people in the community, were not concerned about the cost of domain names going up materially. So there are at least those in the community that are making that kind of claim. I think that certainly my customers would care if the price went up materially. And so I urge you to join in that chorus loudly if you can, because otherwise people will continue to think that that position is widely adopted.
Thanks.
James, do you have any?
I just wanted to emphasize that it's not just cost, and I think you touched on this. It's that whole sections of the globe could go dark because, you know, I think haven't we discussed before that there are only two or three accredited registrars for all of Africa? You know, you're going to get into situations where unless the registrant speaks the right language, lives in the right geography, or has the right method of payment, you know, they're going to be shut out. And it's going to become very risky for the registrars who are going to serve them at their own peril. So, you know, I think that this issue needs to be emphasized. Thanks.
Thanks, James. And that's a good place where we can draw in our members and participants from those parts of the world to bring some of their experience to the table and their concerns about both cost. We heard that in our meeting this morning, that they're concerned about costs and concerned about access, and anything that we do can't be putting additional barriers in their way.
Any other questions on that front, Volker?
Maybe just another point regarding the access question that was brought up. One of the most chilling points from the things that I heard yesterday or during the verification panel was the proposed point system, which was suggested that the number of points that a domain name would have due to the verification could then be used to filter the content by access providers or internet providers or search engine providers. So that would be some form of debarring certain sections of the world from equal speech access through the internet, because their data just cannot be verified the same way the data in the developed world would be able to be verified.
Yeah, misuse of that as a reputation or use of that kind of reputation information as a form of censorship, or inviting intermediaries to block some speech would certainly be disturbing to us.
That has been the intention of the suggestion. Has been just detailed
to us. Well taken. Thank you.
Any other comments? One question that I had, there was a earlier discussion today, and it would be interesting to get your feedback on the position with respect to the IOC and the and Red Cross. I don't know if you guys had, within your stakeholder group, had thought about that issue, but it's something that we talked a lot about this morning, so it would be interesting to hear your thoughts.
Sure. And this is one where I think that neither constituency in the stakeholder group is happy with the proposal that's on the table right now. We have the non-commercial constituency who is strongly opposed to special protection for organizations that goes beyond what's currently given to them and what's currently available in the law. I mean, currently, they are anyone is forbidden from registering those names. What more do they need? And from the non-for-profit operational constituency, the NPOC, where they've said, why would it be limited to those two organizations? How can you possibly say that only Red Cross and Olympic are granted these protections when other intergovernmental organizations and other non-governmental organizations also have names about which they're concerned? So as a whole, we think that there's a problem in both process and substance. Procedurally, this is coming too late in the application process. It's coming from the wrong place, from the board rather than from and GAC rather than from GNSO and rather than from engagement with GNSO. And on substance, we don't think these are good recommendations.
Thanks. Any other topics or questions? Folks wanted to mention, Wendy, any final thoughts on?
Well, it might be. I don't know that we. So we were also talking about other things that were on the table on council, the thick who is motion that's there. We were inclined not to support a PDP on thick who is for incumbent registries, although we thought it's wrong for thick who is to have gone in as a requirement on new GTLD applicants without a GNSO policy development. And so perhaps if that were intent on going forward, it could be expanded to the matter of should everyone or no one be required to have a thick who is. We also have had begun discussions on what will council and the organization look like when potentially hundreds of new applicants are coming in and joining constituencies and community, and how can we work to ensure that the community is ready to work with them.
Great, thanks. Any other last comments? We have 2 minutes. Or 1 minute. So thank you. You all set?
Yeah, well, I just wanted to thank you for reaching out to us and to explicitly acknowledge how helpful it's been that you, Gray, have reached out to us and engaged in calls. And I think we're really looking forward to finding ways to work together.
Great. Thanks so much. All right, we are now going to go into closed session number 3. So, sorry about that.
So I shall return the microphone and head back to the NCSG meeting this afternoon.
Great. Thank you very much, Wendy, for coming. We appreciate you taking the time out of your day to come join us.